Every day's the same. Every day's the same. Every day's the same.
Everything is exactly the way it was before.
I'm sorry. Every day's the same.
Hello. Oh, that's weird. Welcome to another episode of It's Time to Rewind, a podcast stuck in its own time loop, right along with the movies we discuss. In this season, we're taking a look at time crimes. That's still weird. I am your host, Bubble Wheat, from Flights, Tides, and Movie Nights, and in this episode, we're discussing Jess's Saturday morning in Triangle that starts at 6 minutes and 55 seconds when the sailboat Triangle is heading out to sea, and ends at 21 minutes and 51 seconds with everyone on the overturned Triangle. With me today is my guest, Jay Cluett from Deep Blue Sea, the podcast. How are you doing today?
Very well, thank you, Bubbly. I'm doing a lot better than Jess is. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, I can imagine so.
I'd be upset if any of your guests are having a worse day than she is.
Yeah, that would be pretty bad. It's been a very long day for Jess.
Never ending, you could say.
Yeah, definitely. So this is not really, this is like, I'm calling it Loop 0B. Because this is like the second half of the pre-loop, although it's like it is kind of the first iteration of the bigger loop. Because it's one big loop with three smaller loops in the middle.
This is before Phil gets to Punxsutawney. The day before, yeah. I would say. Yeah.
Pretty much. So, before we get into the movie, what is your background with Triangle? Because I know you are one of... most of the guests have seen this movie before, but I had not before deciding to do this movie for this season. So how did you first find out about it and watch it?
Okay, well, I used to host the Lambcast. That's where you and I met. And we've done numerous episodes on time travel films or time loop films. They come up often. Myself and many other Lamb members, including yourself, are big fans of time travel in films. And I think Triangle just came up in conversation as being this great film. And so I marked it on a list of, I'll get to that one day. And I found it secondhand in a DVD shop, and I bought it, and I didn't watch it for like 6 years. It just kind of sat on my shelf. And then I've started doing a thing on my site where like I've got a lot of DVDs I've never seen before. And so it's just pick 12 at the start of the year, and I'm going to knock out those 12 one a month for the course of the year. So last year I did the entire Star Trek, all the films from that one. So it was great. But the year before that, Triangle was on that list. And so I finally sat down and watched it, and I think I might have hyped up a little bit too much because I didn't like it first time around. I get a little bit annoyed at films that kind of signpost themselves a little bit too much. I adore Shaun of the Dead and Hot Fuzz, but when it came to The World's End, I'd kind of learned Edgar Wright's tricks at that point, so there's like a whole speech story of the past in the opening segment of that lays out how the rest of the film is going to go. And watching that the first time around, I thought, well, you just told me the entire plot of the film, and it played out exactly as I thought it did. So that's why The World's End is lesser in my mind. Triangle sets up, it has too many things hinting at what's going to happen or hinting at the situation. And I think it's a downfall to know that it's a time loop film going into it. So this is kind of the negative point of your podcast where you're picking it because it's a time loop film. So anybody who is discovering Triangle because of your podcast, you are kind of ruining it for them.
Yeah, I think it's one of those movies where if you watch it as a surprise, it handles the surprise element really well. But so far, as I'm digging into it, I think it does hold up to scrutiny, and I think it is structured pretty well so far from what I've seen. And spoiler alert, I have actually recorded the next episode before we recorded this one, so this will be the third episode that I've recorded, and everything is pretty interesting to see how the echoes and how like you said, it does set up a lot of it if you're watching this for the second, third, or fourth time.
Yeah, I'm sure you would have talked about it in the previous episode, where there's like when she's driving through the town, there's a sign saying goodbye, please return. And there's like lines of dialogue where it's exactly like it was before. And in this segment here, she's talking about how her son likes things if they don't change, and they have to be doing exactly the same again and again. And I just think there's one or two too many of those. Like I get it. I see what you're doing, but you can kind of stop doing it.
Yeah, and one thing I think
Just tone
interesting
down a little
about
bit.
this section of the movie, because this is, we're focusing on just the boat ride, and I do think that it's appropriate for me to separate this out from the beginning, because this is like one scene that's not repeated at all. Because the scene before this with her son and with her on the dock with everybody, that is repeated at the ending. But then the movie ends before we get to the repetition of this scene. So whenever I started watching it, and again in isolation, I actually didn't remember a lot of what goes on in this scene. I think because I had only seen this movie twice before, start to finish. And I think because this doesn't get repeated, and because it's not as relevant to the plot, that it feels like there's quite a bit of stuff that your mind can just skip over as almost like filler.
Yeah, I'm with you. And I watched this for the second time this morning, and I kind of remember a lot of the boat stuff, but it was actually the ending of the film that I'd forgotten, the taxi driver, shall we say. I'd forgotten that whole element of it. And I was kind of appreciating the film more up until that point, because I was like, oh, this is like an exploration into mental illness. Is how much of this is in Jess's head? Is each character some kind of depiction of some facet of her personality or something? Are any of these people actually real? And then like the guy showed up at the end, and it's like, oh, it's the devil. This is just I kind of knocked it back down a star in my mind. I didn't want that.
Or death.
Yes, yeah, but it's some kind of supernatural entity punishing her for crimes committed in the film. Yeah.
But let's go ahead and dig into to this section of the movie.
Yes, great.
I'd say a lot happens like just in the first few seconds. Once we get past the establishing shot of the triangle through the ocean, and the people winding cords.
People, you mean Liam
Yeah.
Hemsworth? My least favorite
Liam
Hemsworth, winding.
Hemsworth. So you like him better than Larry Hemsworth?
I mean, I have no opinion on Larry. I only have negative opinions on Liam, so probably yes. Liam has yet to be in a film I like. Every choice he makes is kind of is a bad one as far as I'm concerned. Like The Hunger Games is a franchise I do not enjoy.
Yeah, Larry Hemsworth, aka the fictional Hemsworth in The Good Place.
Of course, I'm sorry. Actually, the Good Place is a good parallel, because when I was talking about the all of the hints they do, there's that scene where Ted Danson's like, I left you like 1,000 hints and you caught four of them. I feel like that's what this film's doing, where it's leaving 1,000 hints as to what's coming. I just needed four. But yeah, the best thing that Liam Hemsworth has been in is that Muppets TV series, as far as I'm concerned. And even then, that wasn't great. But yeah, he's winding the cords like a best like the best of them. He's using that winch. He can do it. So good for him.
Yeah, and then we cut to Jess's hand and a slow pan up to her face as she's sleeping, and then it cuts to some crabs on the beach, a close up of an open, unmoving eye, possibly dead. She's very pale, and it is Jess. And then we have a wave with a dark piece of clothing, which could you tell what was in the water?
First time around, I mean, having watched it again, yeah, it's the boiler suit she puts on later. But first time around, I didn't know what it was because we hadn't seen it at that point.
Yeah, even me watching this again, it took me a couple repetitions before I was sure what it was, because at first I was like, that was, it's a piece of clothing, and then I was like, it kind of looks like a body. But then I look closer and it's like, oh yeah, it's her coveralls that she that Jess 3 wears, as I refer to her.
Yeah. Future Jess in my notes, but yes. But then the future Jess changes numerous times. So yes, Jess 3 is a better way of doing it. Yeah, I look forward to listening to you talk about how she managed to get that off whilst unconscious and swimming. So
And
I'm not here to
then,
pick holes in the film. I overall do enjoy the film as a concept. I just want to tweak it a little bit to improve it.
in her dream, the potentially dead Jess, as she gets hit by the waves, we just see like just I think just a couple frames of movement. So we do see that in her dream that Jess is alive, but then it cuts back to Triangle Jess. And she wakes up.
Yeah, and how long do you reckon she's been? They say this. She's been asleep for a couple of hours. So they must be like really far out there. She just, do you reckon she just kind of walked on the boat, went down below decks, and just passed out? Or is there any kind of preamble before that happened?
Well, based on the time that they give in the first loop, because they say that it's 11:30, and the sticky note at the beginning says that I think that they're supposed to leave at 8:30 in the morning. Maybe it's been not quite 2 hours, so maybe like a little over an hour and a half.
Okay, so yeah, so it's 11:30 once they get on the Aeolus.
Yeah.
Okay, right, fair
So
enough.
that this would be in about 10:15, give or take.
Yeah, okay, that makes sense. You ever been in that position where you just get on a motor transport and then you just pass out, whether you're amongst friends or not?
No, but this is, it's been a long day for Jess because, she doesn't technically, like, this is her sleep, if you think about it. This is her only respite, like this
That
and the
and on the
taxi
beach,
ride.
yeah. I bring it up because I can completely relate. I'm a person who does not sleep enough, ever. So if it ever gets to a point where I kind of sit down and have nothing to do, I pass out. I've fallen asleep in an MRI machine, which a notoriously difficult place to fall asleep in. I've fallen asleep whilst walking a dog before. Just I need to sleep more. But yeah, I think I've been the same where I would get there, just kind of sit on the bed, and then it's 2 hours later. I've missed plane takeoffs because of this.
And I haven't mentioned it this episode, but we well, I guess we have already talked about Jess 3, so spoilers. For anybody not realizing that we're talking about this time loop movie in great detail,
You have come to the wrong place.
if you think about this in the grand scheme of Jess's, endless torment, I suppose you could say that she gets some rest on the beach as well.
Yeah, I think so.
So,
When she's unconscious in the sea,
yeah.
that's a very restful sleep, yeah.
But other than that, she doesn't really get any rest because it is just this constant time loop, and it's not like Groundhog Day where he does get the sleep every night and then he wakes up and his body is reset to exactly the way it was after a full night's rest.
I mean, I don't want to go back into Groundhog Day, but I don't think he gets a full night's rest because he's getting up early. I think he stayed up maybe a little bit too late the night before.
Yeah.
Would be my get, but that's a different film. That's 2 seasons ago. Let's not go back there.
But this, Jess is just in this constant daze after having done this, maybe
Yeah.
somewhere 40 to 50 times at this point.
Yeah. Well, I think you may have already mentioned this. How this is very similar to one of your hiatus episodes, the Black Mirror White Bear episode. I think what Jess is going through is very similar to what the protagonist, in air quotes, goes through in White Bear.
Yeah, I think that's really is kind of a great parallel, and I do think so. Since we're talking about this, do you think that there's any element of memory loss, or do you think that Jess is fully aware and she's just playing along.
When I sat down to rewatch it this morning, I thought she was fully aware, but and which made a lot of her decisions not make sense for some elements. But then, when she wakes up from her nap, she's woken up by Heather, who says, "Bad dreams cure you of real life stress," as to the champagne. So I think that the bad dream she's having is like a forgetting dream, where that's like resetting her memory a little bit.
Yeah, I could see that.
Is my theory.
Yeah, and I think it's interesting that whenever Jess wakes up, the first thing that she asks is she asks if Greg is okay.
Yes. And yeah, because the first thing she said to him on the dock was she was sorry, because the last thing she remembers is shooting him.
And she says that she has a terrible dream, and when Heather asks about that, Jess answers that she doesn't remember it. And she answers it without missing a beat. It's like, she doesn't think about it. She's just like, I don't remember. It the way I look at that as another clue as to it, I feel like she's almost rehearsed that answer. And she's saying it because that's like her muscle memory. She said it before, and so she's just saying it again out of habit.
So do you think that she retains her memories?
Yeah, I do. And there's another moment. I mean, you already talked about it where she's talking about Tommy. And, whenever we get to that as we're going through this scene chronologically, I think that's whenever I'll go into a bit more detail with my theory.
Okay, I disagree. I'm gonna put a stake in the ground that I don't think she has a memory of it. I think that it's the realization that she's done this several times before is part of the punishment over the course of the day, and then it gets researched as all again. They would both be different kinds of punishments, I suppose, having the memory. But then, if she had the memory, she might try different things. And then, when she's on the ship and they're walking down the corridor, she says she can kind of remember the corridor, which says to me like she's lost her memory, but still is like echoes of memory in there somewhere. So. I'm more than happy to listen to your theory over the course of this series as to how she's retained her memories, but my opinion is she has
Yeah,
lost
so your opinion is all the various like moments that she has, like when it, like you said, whenever she sleeps and she has a dream that, the rest of the loop kind of fades away, like whenever
Yeah.
that's how I dream too. If whenever I wake up, I will remember that I had a dream and I'll remember moments of it, but within seconds, the memory just like dissipates, like just immediately as soon as I open my eyes. That about the only time that I can remember my dream is if I make a conscious effort before I open my eyes to really focus on details of the dream. Because if I open my eyes and do anything else,
I
that it the entire dream just like disappears, other than, well, that was a weird dream.
I'm always amazed hearing people talk about these kinds of things. I have no memory of dreaming. That's not true. I remember two dreams in my entire life, and other than that, I don't have any recollection of having a dream. I'm told that I must dream every night, or I'd have some kind of severe brain condition. Whether that's true or not, I don't know. But hearing you say like you need to have the conscious decision to once you've woken up, but before you've opened your eyes, those two things do not happen in that order for me. my eyes open, and then I am awake. They are concurrent, I would say, but there is no like being awake before my eyes open.
So getting back to the scene, we have just a brief conversation between Victor and Greg, talking again about Jess acting weirdly and staring off into space for like 20 seconds. And that's, I wonder if she has, if that was like one of those off-screen, where she has a flashback, and it kind of like in the comedy shows where a character like has a flashback and then they show the flashback and then they cut back to the scene and then the other character is like, hey, what's going on? You've been staring off into space for like 2 minutes.
Yeah, where did you go? Yeah. Yeah, that happens on Fleabag, happens on Scrubs. Yeah, that's always fun when that
and
happens.
you know, he has the conversation about where she said that, yeah, you know, she doesn't, at first she said she doesn't remember where her son was, and then she said that he was at school. And Greg does something that he does a lot in the next scene, where he immediately rationalizes away Jess's weirdness. And, you know, he says that he goes to a special school, and he goes to school 7 days a week.
Yeah, which makes sense. And he can, like, Greg is the character who knows Jess. He has met her before several times. He invited her along. So maybe there have been some days where she's seemed a bit off because he's heard stories where she's had to deal with Tommy, where he's, you know, he has autism. He can be more difficult to deal with than other children. Not difficult. Difficult is the wrong word. More challenging. and so he will have seen these, like, these Jess in these situations, and he has the excuses to make for. He can reason it out. Also, it's quite clear that Greg fancies Jess. So yeah. He's like, stop talking about my girlfriend that way, kind of thing.
Despite Sally bringing on her yearly setup with Heather.
Please give Sally her proper title of the worst person in the world. The most annoying character committed to film.
Even though, you know, before we get to that, Downey does have the moment where he tosses in the gay joke, where he asks if Greg and Victor sunbathe together sometime.
Sorry, their proper title is the most annoying couple ever made to film. There we go. I'll correct.
I will not disagree with you there.
I later in this chapter, I do love Downey. He's helping, in air quotes, Victor do the sales and things, but he's just posing. He's just like sunglasses on, arm outstretched, just ready for some kind of GQ photo shoot that's never going to happen.
And then Jess comes out from underneath and immediately says sorry again. And Greg says, you say sorry one more time and I'm going to throw you overboard. Which is, again, it's another one of those foreshadowing, like possibly over-the-top foreshadowing, because she does get thrown overboard, except she gets thrown overboard by Jess 2?
1?
Jess 1?
I think it's Jess 1. Because Jess 2 sees Jess 1 throw Jess 3 over.
Right.
Perfect sense.
Yeah. And for people listening to this who haven't seen the movie, good luck.
I mean, technically, there is like a second Jess 3 that... who gets shot by Jess 2 and then never appears again.
Well, there... The one thing that I do like about the loops, and I'll get more into it in the future episodes, is how the loops, they're not 100% you know, repetitive. There are changes, like subtle changes within each loop. They all follow the same basic outline. But then within the overall outline, there are, you know, chaos theory changes here and there.
Yeah. Again, I'm looking forward to hearing that. We'll be dug into over the course of this series, because I have a query as to what happens to Greg 2. Because we see Greg 1 is shot. Well, because Sally and Downey... the most annoying couple to come into the film. They both die twice. They get shot in the theater by Jess 3, but then they're also killed. Downey is throat slit, and Sally is stabbed and crawls away to the Sally death deck. And but Greg, Victor gets stabbed back in the head every time. That's Victor's lot in life. But Greg, I don't know. He gets shot, but in the first one, I don't know if he gets shot in the second one. Is there like a Greg still roaming the hall somewhere on these other ones? I don't know. I didn't go back and watch it a third time to decide this, but maybe that's something to keep an eye out for, what happens to Greg 2.
Yeah, and I haven't dug into the second loop yet, so I don't have an answer for that one either. And then, you know, back to the scene then. Well, first there's the bird flying overhead, and Greg comments that It thinks that they're a fishing boat and it's about to go hungry.
It is not going to go hungry.
Yes.
It is going to feast on Downy.
Yes, we do see it and its friends eating one of the dead bodies, which, she says it's Downy, but, well, I guess you could tell by the clothes, but again, I haven't looked at it more closely, so even watching it twice, I would tend to get some of the characters mixed up. Like, she might say that it's Downy, and it's like, is that Downy
Yeah,
or is
it's
that what was the other guy's? Oh yeah, Greg.
it's a long way away. It could be anybody, but the seagull that's following them. Do you think that that seagull gets caught up in the time loop as well, so that when they're all feasting on Downy, that's like a dozen of the same seagull?
Yeah, because everything gets reset. So it's like the same birds, and this could even be like the same bird that Jess hits with her car at the end of the film. And it's just like, following her throughout the entire loop.
I don't think it can be the same one that she hits. Well, I suppose it could be other seagulls. Because in which case, all of the ones feasting on Downy aren't the same one in the loop then, because then there would just be three of them. Maybe. Well, I suppose there could be more loops while she's out drifting at sea. This is difficult to determine. But yeah, okay. Looped seagulls on board with that theory.
Yeah, the ones that the first time it was just one seagull, and then the second time it's two seagulls.
I mean, you say the first time. This is another issue that I have. What happens the first time? Because there's a bit where she copies something that she saw before. Because there's a note that she finds where she makes a handwritten copy of it to check the handwriting. First time around, what happened there? There was nothing to copy.
Well, it
So
probably.
why did she write the note saying kill them all?
Well, I think she probably came back and wrote that as just three, and I'm only just developing this theory now, and I'll probably develop it more whenever I actually get to that point. But I think it could be explained away,
Okay, I hope so.
because I do think that the first loop was different. And then once
It would have had to been, yeah.
and because again in the first loop all the lifeboats are missing. My theory is that the lifeboats were all there at the beginning.
Okay, and so multiple Jesses tried to get away in
Yeah.
lifeboats.
And then once the
And so maybe there were like 12 boats, and they took 12 of them away. One after, yeah. Okay. Yeah, I like that.
And then this gets into then this goes into the character development scene where we basically get a background on all the characters, and I think that this isn't bad exposition. I think this works because it is doing two things at once, and I think the best exposition does multiple things at once because this is showing Greg and Jess's relationship, showing that they have this connection. And he's also kind of introducing her to all the other people. And it also makes sense that he's doing this now while they're out at sea rather than at the beginning because, she immediately went below decks and fell asleep. And this is her waking up.
Yeah, I would describe this as enough exposition. I wouldn't say it's fantastic. It's not the best ever. That's Jurassic Park, obviously, the DNA scene. But this is enough exposition to get us going with the kind of film this is, the kind of characters that they are, and the situation they're going to be put into. You get the relationship with each other. That's all you really need.
Yeah.
And like the one who has the least amount of exposition about her is Heather, and she dies in this chapter. So. She is a female brought onto the boat, and oh, look,
Yeah,
she's gone.
and we also get that Sally does not like seeing Greg with Jess because the unspoken thing is that Sally thinks that Jess is a gold digger.
Because of her shorts. That's a line from Heather, actually. It's not a line from Sally, but yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, Greg owns a boat, but then he also lives on the boat. So. I don't know if he has some kind of vast fortune or he just kind of lives on his boat. with this strange guy he found in an alley.
Well, I mean, whenever he looks like Liam Hemsworth, you do what you gotta do.
This is why, like, I can understand Heather saying I'd rather fancy the boy, calling Liam Hemsworth the boy. It's a bad thing. No, you may not fancy this attractive man. God damn it.
Well, he was 17 or 18 when they filmed this.
Fair enough. Okay. I'll allow it.
And then, of course, this is getting back to what we've kind of been dancing around this episode, I feel like, where they have the conversation with about Tommy, and Greg asks if things are okay with Tommy, and Jess's lines are the same. Every day is the same. Tommy likes things to be a certain way. If I do one thing differently, I lose him. And that line right there, that's the one that I'm latching on to. And I think that this is why, this is what supports my theory that this Jess has, maybe not 100% knowledge of the time loop, but she has like a good 75%, 75 to 80% knowledge of the time loop. And she is just playing along, because I think if she's in a mindset where she thinks that if she does it differently, then maybe she will get out of the time loop and she will lose Tommy forever. Because in this situation, like, to her, Tommy is dead. She is dead in the car, or he is dead in the car accident. And she is going into this in order to repeat things, and she feels like she has to do things the same way, so that way she can get back to Tommy being alive.
Okay, so maybe, cut to the end of the film, maybe when she goes and picks up Tommy and saves him from her other self, Jess Zero, she tries a different method each time to get away from home, to like take him somewhere else. And every time she does that, something else happens. Nope, this can't be right because there's the big pit full of dead seagulls. in which case, I think this is the degrees of my theory that she has no memory of it. Because she keeps on making the same mistakes. She's doomed to make the same mistakes again and again.
I think it's somewhere in the middle. I think that she is trying. Because I do think that there's some element of the supernatural punishment. And that's why things are doomed to happen the same way every time. So, like, whenever she's escaping with Tommy in the car, that is predetermined. Because that's how it has to happen. And that's part of the punishment. Like, but everything else that she's doing, there's an element of, okay, I have to do things the same way so that I can get back to the same moment in time, and so I can get back to my son being alive again this time.
Okay. I disagree, but I'm not going to go into it more. I'm not going to. We're going to sit here and argue for the. That's not what this is. We have each voiced our sides. It's up to the listener to pick one.
And then she also says, I feel guilty when I'm not with Tommy. And Greg says, that's because you're a good mother. And you can't be everywhere at all times. And whenever he says that, Jess has kind of a knowing look. Or what I'd like to think of as a knowing look.
Yeah.
She knows that, she's not everywhere at all times. But I think that...
She's at least three places.
Yeah. She's three places at once on the AOLIS. In a way that this is making her a better mother, because like his line, he says, that's because you're a good mother. And this version of Jess, she's not a good mother, but at least in terms of her relationship with Tommy, and in the brief scene at the beginning, she does have a better relationship with Tommy than Jess Zero.
Yes, that changes. It's kind of clear when it gets to the end of the film. She hasn't really changed as much as she would have liked to have, I would say. But she's at this point, she's trying to be a better mother.
Mm-hmm. And then we get the moment with Heather talking to Greg, because Sally prodded her too.
Just for the record, I'm not interested.
Yeah,
she forgot to say, no offense, at the end of that, I think.
And immediately after she says that, that's when the wind dies.
Yeah.
And the one bit of research that I did do is this, like, pop-up thunderstorm. This, even though this was filmed in Queensland, Australia, this is supposed to take place off the coast of Florida.
Yeah, because the boat's got a Miami thing on it.
Yeah, and Florida does have the greatest number of thunderstorms in the United States. They average over 70 thunderstorm days per year, and the Gulf Coast experiences 80 to 100 days a year. So one out of every 3 days almost, some years, there is a thunderstorm. And it's probably doesn't pop up, you know, this quickly, where it goes to nearly clear skies to a raging thunderstorm in the course of like 10 minutes. But I think it wouldn't be out of the realm of possibility that they could leave for, you know, an all-day sailing trip. And, you know, if they don't check the weather report, they could say, well, it looks clear this morning, so we're going to go. And then after they get out there, there could be a storm coming. And it is possible that someone could get caught in a storm unknowingly if they don't follow the weather.
Okay, yeah, that all makes sense.
And so as this mysterious pop-up thunderstorm rolls in, Greg calls the Coast Guard asking about weather conditions, and then we hear what we will eventually find out to be Sally's voice.
Yes, and then they walk away from the radio before they get to Jess trying to get hold of them in the future, which, frustrating. this is the frustrating watch.
And they also lose contact with the Coast Guard. You know, they stop getting reports from the Coast Guard. So do you think that is just storm interference, or do you think that is like the supernatural punishment messing with them?
Well, I think that the storm itself is a supernatural punishment, which is then also cutting off the communication. So I think both. Because Greg says he's never seen a storm pop up or the wind die down quite as quickly as that, which says to me this is easily a supernatural occurrence. And then just how quickly the storm descends upon them. It's something that could happen potentially in real life, but in this instance, I think it is supernatural.
Yeah, and then we get to basically the chaos of the storm. This is basically like the big action scene.
The action scene. Early on, like 15 minutes in.
Yeah. And I think it's decent. I mean, I think a lot of this storm, like the waves look like cheap but decent CGI.
Yeah, I think they do a good job. I didn't look to see what the budget for the film was, but at the time, Melissa George was the only kind of semi-known actress. You've got, of the six people, you've got four of them appeared in Home and Away. I'm not sure if the Australian soaps make it out to America, but that's something I picked up on. Melissa George, Henry Nixon, Rachel Carbonell, and Liam Hemsworth all appeared in Home and Away. And in Neighbours mm-hmm. as well. So it's not a mega expensive cast. So the budget they spent on the storm, I think they did a good job. It's, you can tell who is where, and nothing's like really fuzzy and, oh, who was it just got pulled out the door? You can kind of follow it going through. Which the worst kind of action scene is one where you get lost.
Yeah, I think it is. There is a little bit of confusion because I know I was a little confused the first time I watched this, and like whenever Heather gets pulled away, you know, I knew it was Heather, but only because all the other characters are like yelling about Heather. But visually, the only way I could tell was because she's the one wearing the striped shirt.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. But I mean, that's better than some other films you'd get where it's like everyone's wearing the same shirt. Someone got pulled out. Who could it be?
Yeah, because, you know, we don't, whenever she does get kind of pulled away by the ocean, which I keep saying pulled away because she literally looks like she's being pulled away.
Yeah, she's needed elsewhere for some other punishment.
Although there is a theory, and it doesn't sound like you've heard this before, but some people think that Heather actually is the only one that survived the boat crash, and that's why she's not punished on the AAL list, is because she actually survived.
I mean, my personal theory is none of these people are real. The only one she's met before is Greg, but even then, for all we know, these memories are implanted. Where she wakes up and he's like, "Oh yeah, I invited you to come on my boat yesterday," and that seems news to her. So, I think these are all just.
I think it is somewhat news because we don't get a lot of the relationship building. It really is pretty much just that one conversation with the two of them at the helm. But I get the impression that she was just a waitress that Greg was friendly to, and they would talk, but this is the first time that they're doing anything outside of the diner.
Yes, definitely. And it's clear that they both maybe are interested in it going somewhere different, like exploring that possibility. But Jess knows she has the limitation of her son, and they're just kind of seeing how it goes. I get that. But I mean, she doesn't know anybody else there, so like Greg could just be kind of collateral damage caught up in the punishment, and everyone else is either fictional or being kind of condemned for their own sins in some way.
Well, I mean, I guess Victor's kind of a blank slate, but we've already talked about, Sally and Downey are not exactly the best people.
Well, we're told Victor has some trouble at home he's trying to get away from. That you can read that in many different ways. Maybe he killed a bunch of people. I don't know.
And I suppose, like, if you do want to squeeze in the theory that they're all being punished, you could say that maybe Greg and Victor do have a relationship going on here, and
This is
which
getting very
is
puritanical.
which it's not, and depending on how old Victor is supposed to be,
I
like
see. Okay.
if he's, because like I said, he could be 17, he could be 18. Like if he's 17, then it's definitely statutory.
Oh,
But
sorry. I yep, yeah, yep.
if he's 18, then it's still, not the best. But at
I
least
forget
he
the different rules
is.
in different countries because in the UK it would be 16, so I get it. I get where you're coming from now, where the age rules are different in different countries. But yeah, I thought you were going away. They're in a relationship. They're both men. Read the Bible sometime. It's a big
No,
no-no
I'm
in
just talking about the age
there.
difference between the
Yes,
two
yes,
of
yes.
them, with Greg being probably in his late 20s. So I would say there's up to like a 10-year gap between their ages, which, whenever that gap is like 17 and 27, that's a lot bigger.
So Heather is the only one without any easily identifiable sin other than lusting after this potentially 17-year-old. So she's whisked away before she can act upon it to save herself. So the storm actually saves her rather than condemns her.
That could be one way to look at this.
We fixed it. Good.
And then this scene ends with them all hanging out on the upturned boat, which I feel like this does call into question the timeline a little bit, because it looks like they've been there long enough for their clothes to dry. So even if we're on a short timeline, say this pop-up storm was like literally what we saw on screen, which would be like 5 to 10 minutes, then that would bring this to be like close to 10:30. I think it would take more than an hour for their clothes to dry.
Yeah, if it was hot enough for that to happen, we would be seeing some signs of like dehydration or more discomfort than we're stuck stranded here. We're stuck stranded here in this blistering heat. So this is some other kind of time element. Well, actually, I mean, we do cut from a big from like Jess shivering in the cold to just cut to the sun. So it is a very, very hot day, perhaps.
And we do have just, another brief discussion bringing up Tommy, where Greg mentions, Tommy's at school, yeah? And I'm saying that, that they'll take care of him.
Sally's hair still seems a little wet, but everyone else is dry, including Jess's wool jumper, which looks like freshly laundered, I think. Talk about Tommy being in school. That's Greg doing his rationalizing again. I do enjoy when like Melissa George is, I would say, objectively a very attractive person. This film does not shy away from making her look terrible. Which, we talked about The Shallows over on Deep Sea, the podcast, where Blake Lively, very attractive person, looks awful as that film progresses. Not afraid to look terrible. But then compare it to Great White, a terrible film from last year, starring Katrina Bowden, who looks like when she gets stranded on a raft, she has her makeup artist in the end. Hairstylist along with her throughout. So I always appreciate when somebody who is very attractive looks just really bad in a film, like rings around her eyes, disheveled,
Yeah, she
as we go
constantly
through.
looks like she's just in this daze where she doesn't fully understand what's going on at this point,
Understandably.
which that makes sense whenever you think about this. This is like the 40th, 50th time that she's done this, and she's only getting, 4 hours of sleep each cycle, however long that takes. She is basically devolving further and further into madness each time.
Have you talked about the poster for this at all?
I have not.
Okay, I'm looking at the poster on IMDb where it's a picture of Jess, one or two, I'm not sure, holding the axe, standing on like a bloody floor where there's a mirror image of her as Jess 3 with the boiler suit on, still holding the axe, which to me, massive spoiler. Because like this is showing her own reflection is her. I mean, it's something you pick up on more having seen the film, but if you know it's a time loop film, I bad poster. Gonna say it. Bad poster.
Yeah, there's a few different posters. I think my favorite one is the one that I used for this season's collage, where it's like split into triangles and you see multiple versions of Melissa George in these triangle-shaped glass sections that it's all forms into like a reciprocal triangle. And you see her hand, and you see her sh see the ship in the beginning,
Much better poster.
where that looks really great. And then I do like the one where it's her like with her back against the ship's wall, and you see a basically a mirror image of her face in the porthole,
Yeah, that's my DVD cover. Yeah.
and
But
then.
the reflection has blood on
Yeah,
it.
and then you see the Friday the 13th Part 2 Baghead
Yeah.
Killer.
Behind the first one, yeah.
So I think that one is if you know what's going on, it's great, but if you don't know what's going on, it doesn't give it away.
Yeah, because the reflection of Jess in the porthole with the blood in it, that could be blood in the porthole. That might not be on her face. Yeah, I like that. That's the best one. Well, no, I think the one in the triangles is the best one. And the DVD cover is up is the second one, and the reflection, terrible. The one just on the bloody deck, awful. Hate it.
I agree with that. Well, I do also think that just doing a Google search for triangle movie poster, you have to do movie poster, because if you just do triangle poster, you find a bunch of stuff that is not related to
Yeah.
this movie, because
I can see this being a difficult film to search about.
but there's also one that looks very Asylum-esque, because it has like a blue and black color scheme, and it's the baghead is the focus, and it takes up most of it, and then it has the Aeolus ship like on the bottom half with the triangle fear comes in waves in the middle, and just like
Which
lightning effects and blue clouds.
the tagline "Fear comes in waves" is a great tagline for a different film, I think. There are many kind of horror-ish films set at sea. I mean, this is one of them, I guess. But "Fear comes in waves" is.
I mean, I can understand what they're going with that because, waves are never ending and it's like a cycle. You have a wave and then you have
Yeah.
another wave, which is the same but slightly different, and it just keeps
But
coming.
the motion of a wave, if you map it, is a circle. This film is a triangle. So different things, different shapes. Burn it down.
I think the only other thing that I kind of wish that there would have been some way to show like three versions of like the larger loop without making this film be like 3 hours long. Because I like the fact that it's called Triangle, and then we get three iterations of the loop on the Aeolus for the three sides of the triangle and the three different Jesses. But then we also have this larger loop, which is we only really see two iterations.
Oh, I see. So we need to have somehow have a third iteration outside of the Aeolus.
To make it a triangle within a triangle rather than a triangle within a circle.
I mean, how would they do that without having to show the action on the Aeolus again?
That I don't
But
know.
still establishing that something different happened to make what happens outside of it different. Oh. That might end up with some kind of a happy ending, which he manages to get Tommy away somehow.
Yeah, to give it more of a happy ending, because this is one of the fewer movies that this does not have a happy ending. This.
Well, I suppose they could have had it where when second time around, so she's the first time that we see Jess one. I'm not sure which one it is. This one, take Tommy away and have the car crash. And then get on the boat. They arrive at the Aeolus, and something else has happened on the ship since we last left it, where Jess is now there to tell them to go away. And so they do manage to go away and not go on there, and we see what would happen if that were to be the case. So
Yeah,
the five of them are still stranded on. Well, I mean, in that scenario, would the other ones believe her? Would they still get off and onto the Aeolus, leave Jess stranded on the upturned triangle boat? What happens then? I mean, that's the best I can do with how it could go that way. But then we'd still be missing out what happened on the Aeolus that was different, so that Jess could make it down to
I
push it
see.
away.
See, what you end up doing is you have you turn this into a trilogy of films somehow.
No one
That's
wants
how
that.
you do it.
Okay.
I know you talked a little bit about how what you thought about this film, watching it the two times, but what are your overall thoughts on the film? Like, is there anything else that you want to talk about in the film in general, and how like I did it improve on a second watch? Did it lessen?
I would say it improved because I watched it that first time around and kind of was like, I did not like this film and I had no plan to ever watch it again. And so your suggestion of doing it for a series, I made a note to watch it again anyway, and then I ended up being on the show, so great. So it kind of forced me to do a rewatch. And so I did appreciate it more. I think Melissa George is fantastic in it. She's someone who I have enjoyed elsewhere. She's very good in 30 Days of Night, for instance. I think she's great. The rest of the cast are fine to annoying. They all have less to do, and some of the stuff they have to do is just be annoying, so I guess they do that well. Goddamn, Sally's a terrible character. Just spends the entirety of the film calling for her dead friend, who is definitely dead. I mean, overall, I appreciate what the film is trying to do. I don't like the the whole devil or death guy showing up at the end and be like, yeah, your time has come, let's go around again. And I feel like he's not sinister enough. I wanted them to lean into that more. He just seems like a guy. I was like, oh, I'll leave the meter running. I wanted there to be a nod to Groundhog Day and that be like Michael Shannon or Stephen Tobolowsky, be that guy. It would be fantastic. But that might be pushing it a little bit too far into making it a comedy rather than the horror thriller it's trying to be. But then I don't think it's enough of a horror thriller. It seems to be kind of sold as almost as like a slasher film with this, you know, as you mentioned, it's like a bag-headed, axe-wielding a serial killer roaming the boat. That's the film I want to watch. That's not the film we get.
Yeah, it's just becoming that serial killer, and, you know, a quarter of the movie is basically spent following the killer from the killer's perspective.
Yeah, which is a very different film from what we got. So I suppose this isn't the film I want it to be. It's a great film in its own right. It's just not what I want it to be, and that is entirely my problem.
Yeah, it is one of those movies that it's hard to classify what exactly it is, other than just a mind trip movie.
Yeah, because I pitched watching it to my wife, and she kind of saw the DVD cover and was like, nope, no thank you. But I think she would have been fine with it, because it's more of a thriller than anything else. For an upcoming podcast, I need to watch Ghost Ship. I don't think she's going to want to watch that either. But again, I think she'd be fine with it.
Yeah, I think I haven't seen Ghost Ship other than, I believe that's the scene. One that has the incredible opening scene.
I know I have watched the whole film once a long time ago, but I have watched that scene dozens of times. That's my just digging around on YouTube. Hey, let's watch the scene for Ghost Ship again. Let's watch a bunch of people get bisected.
There's also a slightly similar scene in the movie 13 Sins.
I have not seen that yet, but I will track it down. I do enjoy watching people get cut in half.
Yeah, that's an interesting 13 Sins and
13 Beloved, it seems to be called.
Yeah, makes very little sense considering okay. What the movie is about.
Oh, there is also a similar wire cutting people in pieces scene in Final Destination 2, which is one of my favorite deaths in my favorite film in one of my favorite horror franchises. So.
Oh yeah, another
fun time.
An alternate title for the original is 13 Game of Death, which that one makes much more sense.
Maybe as a title of a film, but not grammatically.
Considering we're going off track here quite a bit, I think that's about time
to... On a podcast, Julius.
I think that's a good time to wrap things up for this scene. Surprisingly short, considering that you warned me, reminded me that your episode of Groundhog Day was the longest episode to date, and I wouldn't be surprised if it still is.
To be fair, it was the longest segment of that film, where numerous things were covered for the first time. And also, I was the guest. So, yeah, that made a lot of sense to me as to why that... I think we recorded for almost 2 hours for that. So, you got it down to about an hour and a quarter, hour and a half, somewhere in that region.
Yeah, I think...
So you did a Herculean job editing that episode.
The next episode on the first proper loop, we recorded for about an hour and a half. So,
we'll
see how long that one goes to. But, you know, thanks for joining me again on this season.
Thank you for having me. I always enjoy talking about time travel. I have seen no episodes of The Twilight Zone, so I couldn't join you for season 2. So I'm glad we found something I had to talk about for season 3.
And it's also Deep Blue Sea adjacent, which...
It is indeed,
yes. Feel free, go ahead and, you know, plug that as well as anything else that you want to plug.
Will do, thank you. So yes, my podcast is Deep Blue Sea, the podcast, which I co-host with Mark Hoffmeyer. We covered the entire Deep Blue Sea trilogy, because there are 3 Deep Blue Sea films, DVD chapter by chapter. So we did 35 episodes on the first one, 10 on the second, 11 on the third. And since then, we've been looking at Deep Blue Sea adjacent films, which is films directed by Rennie Harlin, or featuring sharks, or that take place at sea, or lots of underwater action, or just something we fancy talking about that day, although we've mentioned a lot over the course of the film.
Am I right in thinking that you have more Deep Blue Sea adjacent episodes than you have episodes on Deep Blue Sea?
Almost. We have in total 57 episodes about the Deep Blue Sea trilogy. So I feel like episodes about Deep Blue Sea 2 or 3 would count as being about Deep Blue Sea. And we are, at the time of recording, I am currently editing the 100th episode. So we have 43 about Deep Blue Sea adjacent films and 57 about Deep Blue Sea films. So we're almost there. but it's going to take us a little while to get to, well, sorry, you were on recently to talk about Aquaman as a Deep Blue Sea adjacent film, so thank you for that. And I hadn't even considered covering Triangle on the podcast, because it just hadn't occurred to me that it was Deep Blue Sea adjacent, but since you've brought this up, I am going to try and have an episode on Triangle out the same week this goes out. So your episode will come out first, and a couple of days later, head over to Deep Blue Sea the podcast and listen to me talk about this film all over again, if you want to. But coming up very soon, in mid-July, hopefully, Mark and I will start releasing our next project, which is Con Air, the podcast. Splitting Con Air up into, I think the last count was 40 scenes, and talking about a different scene of the Nick Cage, John Malkovich, John Cusack, classic masterpiece, Con Air, one chapter at a time. So look out for that on all good and evil podcasting download places. I have a personal site, which is lifeversusfilm.com. I rarely do anything over there, but you can find some old writing on there. I have a very old review of Triangle from the first time I watched it. And I host the Lampedy monthly movie trivia episodes of the Lambcast, which is the official podcast of the Lodge Association of Movie Blogs. Find it at largeassmovieblogs.com. The Lamb, it is a site I shepherd, and Lampedy is movie trivia. It's a fun time.
And as for me, you know, I'm Bubba Weeds, and this podcast is It's Time to Rewind, which you can find the previous two seasons as well as this one on anchor.fm, as well as anywhere else that you listen to podcasts. We also have a Facebook group, It's Time to Rewind, a time loop group. You can join that to talk about the episodes as they come out, as well as anything else time loop related. I am on Twitter, where I'm at Bubba Weeds.
Kill them.
I'm sorry, Jay.
Every day's the same.
Kill them.
I'm sorry. Every day's the same.
Kill them.
I'm sorry. Every day's the same.
Everything is exactly the way it was before.
I'm sorry. Every day's the same.